Okay, what is going on, everybody? Hope you're enjoying this lowly Monday. Well, actually, by the time you're listening to this, it's going to be Tuesday, but we're recording this on Monday. It's the 18th. Selection Sunday was yesterday. The Providence Friars were one of three Big East teams that were left out for, quite honestly, unjustifiable reasons. It was a really, really disappointing night for our program, but also for the Big East Conference. When you look at some of the other teams that were fortunate enough to, and I use this word very lightly, earn a spot in the NCAA tournament compared to, you know, Providence, Seton Hall, St. John's, it's really some head scratching stuff, but we'll get into that in a little bit. Peter, in all of the hysteria from yesterday, we have glossed over a Big East tournament that had some really positive takeaways. I know you were there. So first and foremost, how you doing? Secondly, how was your experience covering the tournament in a media capacity?
I'm doing good. Doing good is probably not the right term. I'm surviving over here based off the Providence basketball and the fate that we saw on Sunday night, not just for obviously Providence basketball, but for the Big East. But we'll get there in a second because we have we'll get there. There's a lot to talk about, and we already started yelling about it before we hit record. But no, you're right, Joe. We had a great Big East tournament. I think it was a cool experience, like you said, covering it in a media side, and I never got to do that for the Big East tournament. I went to 7 games in 3 days, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, which was a great experience. It was really cool meeting some cool people, getting some great photos on the court, getting some great clips from Kim English. I was in the room when they asked about his marital status. So I'll remember that forever, because how can you ever forget that? It was a great experience. And I thought the Friars obviously did not do enough, clearly, according to the committee. But and they had a good tournament. They took care of business against Georgetown on Wednesday. They ended Ed Cooley's season. They went 3-0 against Ed Cooley and Georgetown, which is great, which is what we wanted and what we expected. And then they upset on Thursday night in a great game, and along with the Marquette Nova game, which was an awesome overtime game, great game between those two teams. But Friars upset Creighton. They played one of their better games of the year. A lot of guys contributed, which we've always asked for that third score. We got it against Creighton on Thursday night, and they went 2-1 against a 3-seed. So thank you, NCAA committee, for having your head up your you-know-what. And then on Friday, they started a little bit too slow, Joe, against Marquette, something that we have come to realize with this team. I thought Marquette shot the crap out of the ball in a good way on Friday night to start that game. They battled back in the second half, a lot of heart in that second half. They cut it down to about a 2 or 3 point game, just a little bit ran out of steam. But you can't blame the effort for Friday night. You wish you had a little bit of a better first half to maybe give yourself a little bit more boost heading into the second half. But overall, great experience covering it. And I thought the Friars had a really good Big East tournament getting to Friday night and having a legit chance to win Friday night's game.
Yeah, very well said. A nice recap there. It's always great to beat Ed Cooley and, the shitty Georgetown Hoyas. Just the disclaimer, too, if you don't like foul language, don't listen to this episode, because I'm just going to let it loose. There's a lot of pissed off commentary coming your way. Great to beat Ed Cooley a third time. Obviously, great to beat, a really good Creighton team that got a really favorable seed for the second time this season. I'm going to say that again. We beat a really good Creighton team that is a high seed in the NCAA tournament for the second time this season. I don't think Virginia or FAU, Michigan State, Texas A&M, I don't think any of those programs can say the same thing about high seeds. But anyway, and obviously there was some hardware earned. Devin Carter is the second player in Providence history to win Player of the Year next to Chris Dunn. So obviously that is tremendously well-earned. Carter put this team on his back when Bryce Hopkins got injured. But even before that, if you go back and listen to some of the episodes before Bryce's season-ending injury, Peter and I would talk about Devin Carter's monster start to the season. So from the first game against, who was that? Columbia? No. It was Columbia. From the first game of the season against Columbia to the final game of the season against Marquette, Devin Carter was absolutely phenomenal. So well-deserving of that award. Josh Oduro earned all-conference honorable mention, and Rich Barron was named to the all-freshman team. So those three guys definitely got some well-deserved hardware following, you know, an up-and-down season. But, all right. That's the good. It's unfortunate that, a Big East tournament that saw the Big East Player of the Year drag the seventh-seeded Friars to Friday night is now going to get overshadowed by this, but here we are. Providence, it will be playing tomorrow, or I guess by the time you're listening to this, tonight, in the National Invitation Tournament, otherwise known as the Not Invited Tournament, against Boston College. It's Boston College's Super Bowl, so just be careful if you go on Twitter and you see, you know, any BC fan page or student tweeting about this. Keep in mind, they don't make the postseason very often, and they don't really do a lot of winning, so be kind to our, you know, little brother school to the north. I'm certainly not engaging because I quite frankly don't care, and this tournament is meaningless no matter what way you spin it. But Providence gets absolutely snubbed by the NCAA Tournament Selection Committee. This will be my first comment, Peter, then I'll pass it back over to you. If you're going to completely ignore the quadrants created by the NET evaluation tool, then why in God's name would you even create a tool to evaluate and create the quadrants? The problem with Providence not being selected to the NCAA tournament is that there is no rhyme or reason or justifiable rationale as to why. And the same thing can be said about Seton Hall, St. John's, Pittsburgh, a lot of the other teams that did not receive a bid. There has been no consistency from the committee. There's been no consistency from the chairman of the committee, who has been the vocal outward face of these decisions as to why teams got in versus why teams didn't. And I think that is the most head scratching part of all of this. Because going forward, teams now don't know what to do in order to earn a bid. Is it schedule more quadrant one games in the non-conference, or is it beat the shit out of shitty opponents in the non-conference to make your offensive metrics look better? Is it, you know, you have to be Tom Izzo and have a brand name, even though Michigan State went 19-14 this season with, you know, a 3-7 road record and only a couple of quadrant one wins? I don't know. Peter, go ahead. I'm gonna go down a rabbit hole here.
Yeah, what we saw on Sunday night at 6 o'clock when the bracket was slowly released on CBS, right? And what we saw was an absolute disgrace to college basketball. Right. And they disrespected probably the most prominent conference of all time, dating back to the 70s. Right. Like one of the most dominant, prominent conferences of all time, when they only selected three teams. And those three teams obviously deserved a very high bid, and they got a very high bid. But when you left out St. John's, when you left out Seton Hall, and then obviously when you left out Providence, you disrespected one of the best conferences in college basketball. According to KenPom, the second best conference, and this obviously changes every year based on metrics and based on how you play and all that stuff. It's never set in stone every year, right? The Big East was the second best conference in college basketball. The Mountain West was either the sixth or the seventh best college basketball conference, and they got six teams in. The ACC got more teams in than the Big East. the SEC got way more teams in than the Big East. And I don't know what happened last night, but Joe, you were 100% right. The committee coaches don't know what they're supposed to do, right? And I'm going to make three cases for three different teams. And I know we're a Providence podcast, and I know we're Providence fans. And I know everyone that's listening is a Providence, for the most part, fan. But what happened last night to also St. John's and to Seton Hall affects Providence and affects the conference that we love and affects the conference as a whole. What are we supposed to do here, right? Each team has a legit argument to get into the NCAA tournament. But for some reason, there's an excuse for each team, but there's not an excuse for other teams. St. John's net was 32. 32, and they didn't get in. So what else are they supposed to do? They have a net. They also have four quad one wins. Providence had six quad one wins. No quad three or quad four losses. That's exactly what they're supposed to do. That's what Kim English said on Friday night. We have six quad one wins, and we have no Q3 or Q4 losses. It says it on the website. We did that. And if you're Seton Hall, they also have five quad one wins, and they had 13 wins in the conference and finished fourth. But then you have the likes of...
Not to mention, Seton Hall beat the number one overall seed by 15 points.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you have the fact that Virginia, who has two quad one wins, who has a four spots higher net than us, was in. Michigan State, who has very little quad one wins, who has 14 total losses on the year and only 19 wins. You have teams like Dayton getting to a seven seed. You have teams like FAU not even sniffing the bubble. What we saw last night, or Sunday night when you guys were listening, was an absolute disgrace to college basketball. And it's an issue, and we have a huge issue because, like Joe said, you can manipulate the net, and teams did that. But teams, not everyone knows that, and never, not everyone knew they had to do it. And when you, and go, let's go, let's, we can circle back to the Providence Friars, and obviously, when you only have 12 other teams that have more quad one wins in the entire country, and you don't get in, what the heck are you supposed to do? You went to the semifinals of the Big East tournament. You went 21-13, or 21-14 because you lost, right?
Mm-hmm.
You beat Creighton twice. You beat Marquette, and you beat Wisconsin. All those teams are five seeds or better in the NCAA tournament. What else are you supposed to do? You won 10 games in conference. You didn't have a single bad loss on your resume. But no, Texas A&M can have five Q3 and Q4 losses. FAU can have multiple Q3 and Q4 losses. That doesn't pertain to them. It just pertains to other teams. And we're not going to take into account that Providence hasn't lost a single bad game, and they have six quad one wins. What we saw on Sunday night made literally no sense. Disrespect to one of the best conferences in college basketball. And you rewarded a Mountain West conference that I'm not saying they're not good, but six teams, SEC, eight teams. Like, can we get a grip over here? What is the point of playing these games? What is the point of having a hard conference, right? Like, you have Dan Hurley going to bat for the Friars and St. John's and Seton Hall. You have Greg McDermott going to bat. You know why he's going to bat? Because his team, who was a three seed, lost two out of three times to this Providence team. That's why he's going to bat. Obviously, Rick Pitino went to bat, and he's awesome, hilarious about it. Obviously, Shaheen Holloway went to bat for his team, rightfully so. And obviously, Kim English basically trending by saying the analytics are bullshit.
They are bullshit.
And you can go, because I'm going to go down more of a rabbit hole that I already went down.
Yeah, no, I agree with everything you said. I think bid stealers obviously have they play a role in this.
That didn't help at all.
So, you know, here come fuck NC State for starters, but an even bigger fuck you to North Carolina, because you're number one overall seed. You can't beat NC State in the ACC championship. Come on. Same goes to Oregon. Same goes to Temple for beating FAU. And FAU still getting an eight seed, right? Like,
yeah.
I'm going to say the quiet part out loud here. The only reason Florida Atlantic got an at-large bid is because they went to the Final Four last year and because it was a storyline that drew eyeballs. That's the only reason Florida Atlantic got another bid. Because if Florida Atlantic didn't go to the Final Four last year, they wouldn't even be in the conversation for the bubble. Same thing is to be said about Michigan State. The March Madness Instagram page posted a graphic a few hours ago of the four teams with the longest standing NCAA tournament appearance record. Those teams are Kansas, Gonzaga, Michigan State, and Purdue. Michigan State was not worthy of a bid this year over Providence, Seton Hall, or St. John's. If you look at the metrics that the committee values so highly, if you look at the quadrant one wins that the committee values so highly, or if you look at road record, which is what the chairman of the committee used to justify leaving Providence out, said Providence went 4-7 on the road this year and didn't really have any of the metrics, you know, to make them stand out. Okay, Michigan State went 3-7 on the road this year, has more losses than Providence, has, you know, lower quality wins than Providence, but, you know, God forbid we keep Tom Izzo out of the NCAA tournament. I mean, Virginia. Anyway.
You want to hear what Rick Pitino just tweeted?
Yeah.
3 minutes ago. So we're recording on Monday night. He tweeted at 5:13. This is from Rick Pitino. Let me make sure this is actually – yes, it's actually Rick Pitino before I start spewing stuff. He said, "I believe in getting better, not bitter. I totally believe that six teams – from the Big East belonged in the field. I know our players, along with Providence, are totally disappointed with the decisions made. But not having Seton Hall at 13-7 in Big East play with wins over the top teams is flat out wrong."
Yeah.
That's right. Rick Pitino obviously mentioning a little bit more Seton Hall than he did for Providence.
But this goes with the theme, right, that we have seen over the past 24 hours, and that is this sense of unity across the Big East, right? And, you know, I never thought I'd see the day where, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 out of the 11 teams, minus Georgetown, go to bat for everybody else. I mean, the Georgetown Burners are enjoying this because they hate Providence and because, you know,
I don't think
they're a giant pool of pity of themselves, but, like,
it affects them long term if this is a thing.
It does.
If this is a trend that we start seeing and this is becomes an issue, I'm not gonna go there yet saying this is an issue like long term. It's an issue now and it needs to be fixed because it could turn into a long term issue.
It's not addressed there yet.
But it could be, like, it 100% could be. And look, maybe next year it's a different conference, right? It's just, if the committee is so wishy-washy every single year, you're going to get this, but we've never seen it to this extent. We always have teams, one or two teams, Joe, that you can go back and forth on, right? This right. team should have been, and this team should have been, and whatever. That always happens. This is the first year I've seen an outrage over an entire conference getting screwed over. I've never seen it before, and this opens a huge can of worms for the future.
Also, back to the point I was just making. Over the past 24 hours, we have seen an incredible amount of unity, right? You have Dan Hurley, who has zero reason to go to bat for any of these teams, given, you know, the way he's been heckled on the sidelines, right? Like, the fan bases across the across this conference have given Dan Hurley no reason to go to bat for them, especially Providence fans. And yet there he was with media availability yesterday saying that, you know, the Big East is a six-bid league and that Providence, Seton Hall, and St. John's all got snubbed. Greg McDermott, you know, a little more level-headed than Dan Hurley, said the same thing. Obviously, Pitino just tweeted. Obviously, we know what Kim English, his remarks to the press yesterday. Shaheen Holloway, I think Shaka Smart even chimed in a little bit too. But the level of disrespect for, you know, the committee who values KenPom so highly, for KenPom's second most competitive conference in America, it's just outrageous, right? And this is where the argument, you know, oh, you know, they were bid stealers, right? Like, it's valid, but the bid stealers should have knocked away teams like Virginia, like Michigan State, like Florida Atlantic, like Texas A&M, right? Those are the teams that, or a couple of teams from the Mountain West, right? Like, those are the teams that should have suffered from the bid stealers, not the most, the second most powerful league in America. But
Well, Joe, you're right. What everything I've said is right. Whatever, everything you've said is right. And look, we're not idiots, right? We know the bid stealers didn't help anybody out, right? And
that doesn't help.
It didn't help. 100%. We got a couple bad results throughout the entirety of the weekend, and that was very unfortunate for the Seton Hall, the St. John's, and the Providences of the world. But to put some of the teams into the tournament and to not even have some of these teams, quote unquote, on the bubble, because if you're a 9 seed, you're not on the bubble. If you're an 8 seed, you're not on the bubble. If you're a 7 seed, you're not on the bubble. And A&M, Michigan State, FAU, and Dayton. All four of those teams, I'm not saying like Dayton shouldn't be in, but how safely they were in makes no sense. A&M just gets overlooked for their bad losses for some reason. Michigan State, for some reason, gets overlooked for their 19-14 record and the fact that they have 2 quad 1 wins and the same net as us, basically. That what I is something I don't get. I have no idea what happened last night. It's on Sunday night. It's still so mind-boggling that I can't fully like wrap my head around it, because the conference that's always gets 5 to 6 teams in for the most part, for most years, they get 5 to 6 teams in. And if you win 20 to 22 games in the conference, you are a lock because of how good the conference is. And this year was one of the better years of the conference. KenPom had them right at second. And you have teams winning 20-plus games in this conference with good records, with good non-con records, with quad one wins, with good nets, and not getting in. I still don't know what happened on Sunday night. And the fact that the committee chair keeps just saying random stuff, because he said, and I tweeted it, and it kind of got a lot of people liked it and viewed it, that he said, we look at Q1 wins and no Q3 and Q4 losses. Well, hey, buddy, maybe you should look. You didn't look hard enough, clearly. I don't know where you were looking, because the Providence Friars had 6 quad 1 wins. Only 12 teams had more quad 1 wins than the Friars, and they had no quad 3 and quad 4 losses. I got no idea where you were looking. You clearly are just lying to us to fit a narrative, and it is mind-boggling, and now it is an issue, because we know it affects us, but now you see other people in the college basketball landscape that are not Big East supporters per se are picking up on this and realizing what happened on Sunday night.
Yeah.
Where do we go from here?
I have been
going back and forth with this dude.
I have been talking and texting in circles about this. The bottom line is the committee got it wrong. And has not given, you know, the fans justifiable rationale as to why teams made it versus why teams didn't.
I just want like a normal criteria, Joe.
Well, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Is like,
I know. I'm just. It's like, why is it so hard for this? Just have a normal criteria so people know. Listen, why are we guessing? Why are we guessing out here? There's no need.
All right. We got to move on here. Anyway, the NIT, because we can only control the things that we can control. The NIT starts tomorrow. Obviously, if you're listening to this, it is tonight, 7 p.m. Boston College. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't care to watch. Kim English came out today and said Devin Carter is not playing. I think what's important to note here is that for certain teams, the NIT is important because they don't have or they're not accustomed to postseason basketball. So, you know, let's take, for example, Boston College, who Providence plays in the first round. That program is ecstatic, because Boston College does not play postseason basketball. Providence, on the other hand, is a program that values its seasons and determine success based on NCAA tournament appearances. This unfortunately, through all the ups and downs, through a Big East Player of the Year nomination, will be a less memorable or, you know, candidly less successful season because Providence didn't reach the NCAAs out of our own doing, but also out of, you know, with for factors out of our hands, out of our control. So with that said, you know, there are certain programs, certain teams that value playing in the NIT differently. But for Tom Crean to go on ESPN and basically rip to shreds the handful of programs that have decided to decline an invitation to the NIT, it is just wrong. That is the wrong take. You don't have to play in the NIT if it's not the best move for your program.
Yeah.
Right? Like if you have guys that are banged up from the regular season and it's just not worth it to keep pushing for a meaningless trophy or a meaningless appearance, you don't have to play. If you would rather focus on the portal and recruiting and, you know, rebuilding in the offseason for next season and, you know, preparing for a meaningless tournament is going to take away from that, don't play. Right? Like,
yeah,
you play if you derive value from that, play. If you don't derive value from it, don't play. It's that simple. But I really disagree with the comments that he made and the whole argument that it's soft to decline invitations and not play. The NIT is meaningless and it hasn't been relevant since, you know, arguably the 80s, maybe even before that. You can go back and do research and find when the NCAA tournament took over, but it's essentially a meaningless basketball tournament. Programs don't value their brand or the success of their brand off of NIT championships. Mm-hmm. And for Providence's position specifically, there will be a little bit of roster turnover, right? Devin Carter's going to go to the NBA. Josh Oduro and Tickett are graduating. I would expect that there are probably a handful of younger guys that are going to leave the program in place for some transfers. The NIT is not that important. Now, for guys like Josh and Tickett who have never played in the postseason, all right. If they want to play and prepare for this like it's a postseason game, all power to them. If Kim wants to give the younger guys run, all power to them. But in the grand scheme of things, in terms of the direction of the program and, you know, the national relevancy, playing in the NIT is essentially meaningless.
Yeah, Kim today in his presser said, or Monday said, a lot of the young guys are going to play. Obviously, Rich Barron's not playing with, we think, a concussion. He didn't say why, but that's what happened towards the end of the
match. I think he's conkied.
He
hit his head pretty hard.
Yeah, Kim didn't say it because he doesn't have to because it's college sports. But we can assume that. I think Garway's going to play a lot. Some of the other guys are going to play a lot. But yeah, like Devin's not going to play. And I don't know, right? Like, I agree. What you said regarding the Tom Crean comments, because I think every team has a reason for either accepting the bid and or declining the bid. And look, are some teams pissed off that they didn't get in? 100%. And it's one of the reasons they didn't choose the NIT. I think that's a motivating factor. And obviously, they'll give you a different answer because they don't want to come off like that. But for example, like Oklahoma of the world's or Pitt or for example, St. John's, right? They don't want to do it. But some other teams, like, for example, Indiana, a lot of roster turnover. It's up to the program. I don't care if you accept it. I don't care if you decline it. I'm not against whatever Kim decided, if it was accepting, obviously they did, or if they didn't, I have no issue either way. Obviously, Devin's not playing. We'll see what happens tomorrow on Tuesday night at 7 o'clock, right? Like, we've seen not just Providence, but in years past, teams that just don't show up in NIT. And obviously, it's unfortunate. And obviously, it's the structure, the college basketball structure that doesn't work because of the transfer portal, the fact that the transfer portal is already opened while teams are playing NIT basketball, while teams are playing NCAA tournament basketball. It is just plain stupidity. And I have no idea how no one has ever changed that because It's probably one of the dumbest things ever. And I it's so mind-boggling that it's a thing that you have all these people that claim to be like super intelligent and all these intelligent people that are just keep running the same system back and back. And then we have the same issues every year. Maybe the NIT would be a little bit more competitive if we had the portal after, say, the NIT and NCAA tournament ended. I think it would be a little bit more competitive, not as where I think they would like it. I always think they should make it mid-major teams, but then obviously you have to move the NIT, the transfer portal back, because a lot of the best mid-major players enter the portal, right? But for the Friars' standpoint, let the young guys play. Garway play. Let Corey get some run, obviously. Let Jaden Pierre get some run. I would love to see Rich get some run. Obviously, can't. Santoro, potentially. So we'll see what happens. And obviously, good for Adoro and Ticket to get some more run. And we get to watch him again once and again in a Providence uniform. But it's unfortunate. Obviously, Devin's not playing. And win or lose, I'm a little bit indifferent tomorrow night or Tuesday night. And
yeah.
I don't know what to do with it. Like, I'll watch some of it. I know you're very anti it.
I'm anti NIT.
I'll flip it on for a little bit. We'll see what happens. Let's see what the effort gives you. But I want this program to focus on recruiting, and I want this program to focus on the transfer portal. And I know they're doing that. I'm not suggesting that they're not. I'm just saying, like, that has to be your main focus, because you have to go add guys. You have to add a lot of guys, depending based on guys who are leaving and maybe guys who are potentially transferring. Obviously, we don't know. Have to go attack that portal with full steam ahead.
Oh yeah. No, I'm very anti-NIT. I was a student the last time Providence hosted an NIT game. It was against Arkansas in 2019. I went, and it was arguably, you know, a top three most miserable experience at the Dunk that I've ever had. The game sucked. There was nobody there. And Arkansas beat the shit out of us. So, you know, the popular thing on Twitter right now is that, you know, the teams that want to be there in the NIT are the teams that are going to win. Kim said that the guys do want to be there. The players do want to be there. So we'll see how that translates on the court. You know, if I was a Devin Carter type or a Josh Adoro type or a Ticket Gaines type, and I, you know, battled hard through a crippling injury, Bryce Hopkins tearing his ACL, guys up and down all season, Josh had a kid. If we battled through all of those different adversities to get cut short of the NCAA tournament, I would have more of like an F that type of mentality. But then again, I don't play Division I basketball, so I can't tell you. I can tell you from a fan's perspective, I'm not selling out on the team. I'm not, you know, I'm not being disloyal, but if it's going to be treated like a scrimmage, then I don't see the value in watching that. Just to be frank, given the ups and downs of the season, you know, the heartbreak of, you know, losing at Madison Square Garden and then getting cut short, the heartbreak of watching Bryce go down, like all of the different highs and lows from the past 4 months, I really don't, you know, see the value in watching a scrimmage against Boston College.
Yeah, you're right. There's a difference between the value of you and I watching, right, and the value of what some of the players could get, right?
Right.
And I think that's important. And I think, like, if the players came up and when Kim asked them, what do you guys want to do? Like, do you guys want to play? If they all said no, or the majority said no, they would have said no, right? They would have. It's kind of what does the quote unquote team want to do? And they decided to do it. And you have to respect that decision. Doesn't mean you have to watch it. And I'll flip it on for a little bit. And I probably not watch the whole game, and we'll see what happens. But no, it's a bitter end to a very interesting season in Providence basketball. And I enjoyed greatly talking about it throughout the year. There was a lot of ups and a lot of downs, and it ended a little bit worse than I think we expected and I think we wanted to, based off some of the Big East tournament results. And we'll see what effort they give on Tuesday. And like I said before, we've seen teams just not give effort. And I mean, it's respect. I understand it. Like, I get it. It's hard to show up for the game when you think you should be in the NCAA tournament, right? Against a team that had no shot at making the NCAA tournament, right? So we'll see what happens. I'll be interested to see what Seattle does, right? Like, how do they show up after a team that thought they were in the NCAA tournament, right? Like, how do they show up? And I'm going to be intrigued to see what happens there. But we'll see what happens. But I agree. I'm not a big fan of that idea.
They could go out and prove us wrong and beat the piss out of Boston College. And that's still a very real possibility. And also, I want to put a disclaimer out here, right? If the players and Kim, you know, do derive value from this, then that's not a bad thing either, right? Like, the more basketball that they can play, the better, right? I just, in terms of big picture point of views here, it doesn't do anything for the fans. You know, I'm interested to see the turnout tomorrow. It was really empty the last time Providence played in the NIT.
Yeah.
Keep in mind, that was 5 years ago. It was 2019. Different coach, different players, entirely different state of the program. So maybe they'll do well, but a Tuesday night at 7 p.m., you know, after getting snubbed from the real tournament, I can't imagine it's going to be, you know, the same level of atmosphere as a UConn or a Villanova game.
And obviously they're giving away tickets for free if you're a student, and it's like, what is it, like $20 for non-student, so nobody's breaking the bank. But no, I would guess closer to 6,000 than 12,000, if we even get to 6. An unfortunate end to the thought, an interesting and I would say mostly fun, maybe a little bit frustrating, but fun season. So we'll see what happens on Tuesday night. But we all know, everyone knows your and I thoughts on just the entirety of what happened Sunday night and what transpired heading into Sunday night, right, with the selection show.
Yeah.
We haven't hid that pretty well. We didn't hide that. We made everything crystal clear, and everyone on social media, especially Twitter, has made that very clear. What happened Sunday night was disrespectful and just completely wrong.
I will say this. I love Kim's, voice on social media the past – couple of days, right? From tweeting out about Josh Aduro's ball screen to, you know, responding to that video of the NCAA tournament selection chairman saying this guy said, you know, matrix instead of metrics. Like, Kim has been active on social media, even addressing the press yesterday and saying that the analytics are bullshit. Just, he is such a refreshing face for the program. And even in his remarks about the NIT, like last night, like you could tell he was disappointed about it. He's like, yeah, you know, I'll go up there and we'll evaluate, you know, an NIT invitation. Today, he was a little more chipper about it, saying, you know, the guys want to be there. They want to play. And I guess as a coach, that's always great to hear too, right? Like, the guys aren't done yet. They're going to take opportunities to play. But just all in all, I think the past 24 hours has shown a lot of what Kim is going to be like as the face of the program. I think it's a refreshing perspective. I like that he's not holding anything back and that he's being honest. So we'll see. I think that's a nice step in the right direction for what should be an interesting offseason.
Yeah, very, very interesting offseason. A lot of guys are obviously already in the portal. Obviously not Providence guys, but a lot of other guys at the moment are in the portal, and the Friars have stuff to do. They're going to be busy adding, remaking this roster and seeing what they can do to get back to the NCAA tournament next year.
Yeah. All right. I think I'm all out of comments, Peter, unless you got anything else.
Nah, man. I'm in the nicest way possible. I'm sick of talking about this.
Yeah. Me too. So with that, Providence takes on Boston College. As it stands, it's Monday, so that game will be tomorrow, or by the time you're listening to this, it will be tonight at 7 p.m. If you are not one of the few people that will be in the arena, the game will be at 7 p.m. on ESPNU. We will probably be back later this week with another episode, possibly breaking down a win or a loss, and, you know, the state of the season, depending on the outcome of that game. But for Peter DiBiase, this is Joe Howie. Make sure that you're listening to us, following us wherever you listen to your podcast content. Be sure to check out house-enterprise.com to check out all of the great content that our content creators have produced over the past couple of weeks, and especially heading into the rest of March. Thank you, as always, for listening, and go Friars.
Go Friars.